Hi, my name is Chantal Cecile Cura, and I'll be your moderator this evening for the Moms Fighting Autism conference call. I'm the author of Autism Spectrum Disorders, Adolescents on the Autism Spectrum, and Autism Life Skills. And I'm happy to introduce our guest this evening, Lori Sheely Unnumb, who is an attorney and the mother of a 7-year-old son with autism, whose name is Ryan. She graduated from the University of South Carolina School of Law in 1993, where she was named the International Law School Graduate of the Year by the legal fraternity Phi Delta Phi. Lori also attended USC for undergraduate work, graduating Pi Beta Kappa. I'm really not good at pronouncing these sorority names. I guess I should watch the Greek show with my daughter more often. Anyway, she has degrees in journalism and political science. During her legal career, Lori has clerked for a federal judge, practiced law with the U.S. Department of Justice, worked at the National Advocacy Center, and served as a law professor and director of legal writing at George Washington University Law School, and as a founding faculty member at the Charleston School of Law, where she was named the 2007 Professor of the Year. At present, Lori serves as senior policy advisor and counsel with Autism Speaks. From 2006 through 2007, Lori hosted her own weekly TV show in Charleston, South Carolina, called The Law with Professor Lori. Lori is a working mom and is happily married to Dan Unnumb, with whom she has 3 sons, Ryan, Christopher, age 4, and Jonathan, age 1. For her work on Ryan's Law, South Carolina's groundbreaking autism insurance mandate, Lori won the Jefferson Award for Public Service, the Autism Speaks 2008 Advocacy Award, the Autism Society of America's 2008 Parents of the Year Award, along with her husband, the Rotary Service Above Self Award, the Behavior Analyst Certification Board's Hemingway Award, and the Spencer Volunteer Award from South Carolina Protection Advocacy for People with Disabilities. Her work was profiled on NPR's Morning Edition, and she was featured on CNN on Autism Awareness Day. Welcome to our show, Lori.
Thank you so much, Chantal.
That was quite a mouthful there. You've really done a lot, and I imagine you must have started really early in life to do all that by now.
Well, I've done a lot, but more than that, I've been overly rewarded for the work that I've done with some very nice honors over the past year or two. Which fills up a lot of that introductory time and resume. But, yes, I've had quite a ride over the last 3 years, well, really the last 5 years since my son was diagnosed. But it was about 3 years ago that I just decided, I just don't like it that insurance is not playing its part at all in covering the treatments that our kids need, and embarked on the effort to get legislation passed.
Right. So do you want to explain a little bit to the listeners what Ryan's Law is exactly?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Ryan's Law is the statute that passed in South Carolina last summer, June 7th, 2007, that requires insurance companies to cover autism treatments that are prescribed by a physician. Basically, as I mentioned, I started this journey about 3 years ago, and at the time I was a law school professor, and, law school professors get to spend their summers kind of thinking about big weighty issues and writing scholarly articles, and I thought, if I'm going to spend all summer writing a scholarly article, I'm going to write about something I care about, and that's autism. So I started writing an article on autism and the law, and I thought, well, boy, there are so many ways to go with this. Should I focus on IDEA and the educational system, or should I focus on government services and Medicaid, because we've certainly got problems there as well? And then I decided, no, I really wanted to focus on insurance, because I thought insurance was the entity that was least doing its part to help solve the problem of funding autism treatment. So I started writing this law review article, frankly, on autism and insurance law. And a few weeks into it, I just crumpled it up and said, I don't want to write about it. I want to write a bill instead. So I wrote this bill called Ryan's Law, and it basically requires insurers to cover whatever treatment the child's doctor prescribes. we spent along, my husband and I and some other parents who were interested, spent a long time thinking about whether to list out what specific treatments we wanted covered. But then, you know, we thought autism is a spectrum disorder and so many different treatments work for different children. I really believe that to be true. We have tried a number of different treatments for my own son, Ryan, and he has responded best to ABA therapy. But I certainly know other children who have responded to various other treatments, some biomedical, dietary, whatever. And so I thought, you know, it's really not my place as the drafter of legislation, nor is it the insurance industry's place to tell us what might work for a particular child. So we wrote a broad bill that simply said you must cover whatever the child's physician prescribes in accordance with a treatment plan. The bill also prohibits insurance companies from discriminating against a child with autism. What we were finding was that sometimes an insurance company would just refuse to insure a child with autism, or maybe the child with autism had insurance, but then when it was time for renewal or when you had to switch to another company and another policy, you couldn't get insurance on that child. And that was especially true in the individual market, like if you weren't getting your insurance through your employer, but you had to go out and get it individually, we were finding that to be the case. So Ryan's law also prohibits insurers from refusing to insure simply because of a diagnosis of autism.
Right. Well, I think that's really important, what you did. It's major, and I really appreciate the fact that you did make sure that it wasn't specific to certain types of treatment, because you're right, it is a spectrum, and kids respond to different therapies in different ways.
Absolutely. You know, and a lot of people, I think, who haven't read the bill thought that it was specific to ABA, and a lot of the testimony did have to do with ABA, and as I already said, that's what's been most effective for my child, but I really do recognize that it should cover whatever the doctor says for that child. A few other specifics on the bill, for those who aren't familiar with it. The way I originally wrote it, there was no dollar limitation on the coverage that must be provided, but those of you who know anything about the legislative process know that it's all a matter of negotiation and trying to hang in there. And our insurance industry, as you might imagine, vehemently opposed this bill in any way, shape, or fashion. And they're a very powerful lobby, much more powerful than we moms. Well, maybe they weren't more powerful, but they were more well-funded than we were. So at any rate, the bill did end up with a financial cap. It is limited to $50,000 per year for behavior therapy. So the ABA benefit is limited to $50,000 per year. And then there are a couple of other limitations in it. The coverage is good through age 16. And your child has to be diagnosed by the age of 8.
Okay.
You know, I know, and it covers autistic disorder, Asperger's, and PDD-NOS. If I were writing it again, I'd try to push both of those ages higher. You know, and I don't know who's on the call today. I don't know if there are people who are looking to pass insurance laws in your own state, or you're just looking to hear what's out there. But I'll tell you, we were the first, South Carolina was the first to do this, with the exception of Indiana, which passed a law many years ago. But we were the first in the modern era. And I'll tell you that if I were doing it again, I'd do a few things differently. And that includes, I wouldn't say that you had to be diagnosed by age 8, but again, we were kind of pushed into those restrictions by the insurance industry.
Do you know if there are other states that are trying to pass similar laws based on your Ryan's law?
Yes, there are a number of other states that are trying to pass similar laws. Since ours was passed in South Carolina, I guess 5 other states have passed similar legislation. Texas passed shortly after ours, And this year, Arizona, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Louisiana have passed similar bills. There are a number of states that have proposed legislation that is to be considered this coming year.
Cool. Okay, so I'm going to start now asking you some questions that have been coming in from listeners.
Okay.
There's a lot of questions here.
So and let me interrupt for 1 second, Chantal, and just say that, you know, because I am a lawyer, I need to give the disclaimer that I'm obviously not permitted to give legal advice over the phone to people that I've not met and in various states. So please don't construe anything that I say as legal advice, but I'm happy to try to give some guidance where I can.
Thank you for that. Yes, I think that everyone understands that. I'm so glad that you specifically mentioned that. Okay, here's a question from Terry Atler from Pennsylvania. My name is Terry Atler. I have a 5-year-old autistic son who is insured through CHIP, C-H-I-P. My problem is I cannot find a dentist who will accept this insurance. All the local dentists will not accept this insurance. Any suggestions?
That's a little bit beyond my area of expertise, but I am certain that that CHIP programs in most states, they have to have providers who will accept those benefits. I guess my suggestion would be to contact your Department of Insurance. Every state has a Department of Insurance. The name might differ a little bit from state to state, but if there is a provider problem, then the Department of Insurance needs to know about that, and they can do things to ensure that more providers become a part of that network.
Okay. And here's one from Teresa in Concord. How do I go about finding out what insurance is available in Northern California?
Well, California is not one of the states that has passed an autism-specific mandate. My understanding is that California does have some kind of mental health parity on the books. California is looking to pass an autism-specific mandate, which is what we have here in South Carolina, this coming year. So for the time being, Let me step back and explain a little bit about the structure of insurance. There are two basic kinds of insurance. There are self-insured plans and fully insured plans. To know which one you have to ask your employer. And this is all assuming that you have insurance through your employer. As I mentioned earlier, there's another type, an individual policy, where you just go out on your own and call up an insurance company and say, I want a policy. Like maybe if you're self-employed or for whatever reason you're not offered insurance through your employer. But if you are offered insurance through your employer, one of the first things you need to do is to find out whether your employer is self-insured. What this means basically is that rather than contracting with an insurance company, which assumes the risk for any claims that are filed, your company pools its assets and assumes the risk itself. And some big companies choose to do this because it's more financially advantageous to pool their money and assume the risk for their employees themselves. For example, Microsoft is an example of a self-insured company. Now, the reason that this is critical is because self-insured companies, typically very large companies that pool their own money and assume their own risk, are not subject to state insurance mandates. They're not subject to laws like Ryan's Law. So, first of all, if you live in a state that has a mandate, you need to know whether you're with a self-insured company or a fully insured company that is subject to a state mandate. The next thing you need to do, though, some self-insured companies have voluntarily decided to provide autism benefits, Microsoft being an example. Eli Lilly, I believe, is another example. I just heard that Yahoo is going to include it. Intel includes it. I think the law firm Arnold and Porter. So there are a variety of large self-insured companies that do provide autism benefits. So, you know, I don't know. The question from Northern California, I'm not sure if this person is not insured at present and just looking for an insurance policy, but, you know, work through your employer and find out what different kinds of policies they have. But if you're in one of those states that doesn't have a mandate yet, then really your only hope is to find an employer that voluntarily offers the coverage.
The thing I do want to say about California, though, because I live in California, is that we have regional centers. And so up until age three, they will pay for certain amounts of certain types of therapies, or they will provide them. Until you're part of the school system, in which then the school system is supposed to take over, like the OT and the speech. But if you can show that your child needs this after school hours or needs more than what the system is providing, there's certain ways through assessments that you can actually get some of this through regional center. But again, it's a case by case. So, and again, I don't know why this person is asking the question, like if they're hoping to move to California or if they're looking into insurance because they don't have anything, but regional center can be very helpful. And the thing is of course, they're always going to say no at the beginning, but if you write really good letters and you have good assessments and you can prove certain things in that way, then you can get lots of types of therapies, but again, not all of them.
Right. Well, and I understand that the regional center, a lot of states wish that we had a system in place like California's. And I know it's not perfect, but I think there are a lot more therapies available there than in many other states.
It's true. I don't think I would have survived anywhere else with my son who requires 24-hour supports if I was living in another state. I'm really, every day I'm so happy that I live here. I can't tell you, even though it isn't perfect, but the laws are in place. You know your way around the laws, and that's a lot of what I talk about in my first book, Autism Spectrum Disorders, about how you, as a parent, should get the information you need to be able to find out what your rights are, which is why it's so wonderful that there are these conferences and that we have this wonderful person here to talk to us about the law that she put into effect for her following the experience she had with her son, Ryan. So I'm going to ask another question now.
Okay.
Here's one from Kay Lyon from Salt Lake City. How have those states who have made it law for insurance to cover autism done so?
How have we done it?
Right.
Ooh, lots of hard work. If the question is really kind of about the political process, I'll tell you that what we did was personally contact every single legislator in our state and tell our story. One thing I have learned about politics is that legislators, politicians respond to basically only two things, votes and money. We didn't have any money, none, zip, nothing whatsoever, because when I started this effort, Autism Speaks barely existed, and they did not have a government relations department, so there was no national organization undertaking this movement. We did have a chapter of the Autism Society of America here, but that wasn't really their thing to support this bill. So there was no organization and thus absolutely no budget to try to pass this legislation. And so we thought, okay, we lose on the money score, but we do have votes. We have a lot of people who have children with autism or who have friends who have children with autism. You know, the network is unfortunately growing larger and larger every day. So we said if we can't outpower them with our by hiring a lobbyist, we didn't have a lobbyist, we'll just go to them and appeal to, you know, that we're voters and this is what we're asking them to do. It was really the entire effort in South Carolina, which took 2 years, was kind of your whole seventh grade civics class come to life, where an average citizen just goes to the government and petitions the government and says, look, there's this problem that you're not aware of, and we need your help to solve it. We need you to pass some new legislation. And that's kind of how it worked. We, in South Carolina, there were 46 senators and 124 legislators. So I looked at that. I said, all right, that's 170 people. How hard could it be to have 170 conversations, you know, when we're talking about something like this bill that's so important for so many people? So I wrote a letter to as many parents as I could get to. I actually went through one of the ABA providers in the state and asked them to help me disseminate the letter to their families, since I didn't know everyone. And I just explained what my bill was and what I was trying to do, and asked people to call me if they'd be willing to help. And, you know, the key thing is every single legislator needs to be contacted and needs to be told a personal story, but the legislators really need to be contacted by somebody in their district. You've got to have a constituent in that legislator's district do the ask. We called that our asker. And so I kept the spreadsheet, and I had 170 different rows on it, one for each legislator. And beside each legislator's name, I had the asker, or one or more people in that district who would have the initial conversation. And I don't know if any of you have been to one of my summits, the legislative advocacy summits that I do, or heard me speak at another conference, but it's really pretty funny. We our strategy was simply to call up and ask for a favor. We decided that it was too much to hit legislators with all the data and details and facts and figures about autism. Most of them didn't know very much about it, and it was just too much to explain therapy and biomedical interventions and all these different things. Like, we didn't think we could hold their attention right at the outset, and that it was too much for them to process. So we would pick up the phone and say, Senator Smith, this is Lori Unum. I live in your district. I have a child with autism, and I know that there's an autism insurance bill that's pending this year, and I want to ask you a favor. As a favor to me, would you sign on to co-sponsor that bill? That was it. That was the ask. We didn't even tell them anything about the bill. I mean, occasionally we would say, one would say, well, what is it? And we'd say, well, it's an insurance bill because kids with autism aren't covered by insurance. And typically they would say, you're kidding. They didn't know that. And that was pretty much all. You know what? Not one person ever told us no. A few people didn't, you know, they hedged a little bit, and they said they wanted to think about it. But most of them just flat out said yes, just because we were a constituent asking a favor. They don't like to say no to the people who can vote for them or not vote for them. You know, go ahead, Chantal, sorry.
Because they need those votes. So, of course, you're absolutely right. And the way that you were approaching it is the way that I say we approach everything, is, you know, you get more flies with honey than vinegar.
Exactly.
So you're asking to do you a favor. You're not complaining about something. You're asking them for a favor. So it's going to make them look good no matter what.
I've got to tell you, the legislators in South Carolina are so proud of themselves right now that they did something good for a lot of nice families who needed the help. They are so accustomed to people calling up, griping and complaining about everything under the sun. And we just decided to take the exact opposite approach. We called up, we were friendly, we were polite, and we, and I think this is key too, we always assume that they didn't know about this problem. we assumed that if they knew there were all these families out there struggling the way we were struggling, that they would have already done something about it. But they didn't know. And you know, why would they? They're not supposed to know about, just when you get elected doesn't mean that you are omnipotent and you know about every problem and you know how to fix it and what needs to be done. They didn't know. And they were glad that somebody brought it to their attention, and they were interested in helping.
You know, that's really two important points there, which is important for the type of work that you're talking about in terms of legislature, but also even just for going in for your IEPs, because we parents typically are so thinking of all the challenges and problems and things they need for their son or daughter, they go in assuming that the school district person is aware, you know, the administrative person who's representing the school district is aware that we already go in feeling negative about them when that's not true. A lot of times they only know, they don't have time to know all the details. So we already know more than them, and if we go in a lot of times in a more positive manner, we already are getting them more open to listening to us. That's the first thing that's so important to remember is that they don't know everything. And the second one is, I can't remember what the second one is at this point. I'm so tired. I'm saying it's cocktail time, right?
But, you know, I think I couldn't agree with you more on that whole approach. And we just, I would talk to all of the volunteers, all the parents in South Carolina who said they would help me and say, you know, consider it your job as a citizen of this state to educate the legislators. You are the one who knows more about it. They're the ones who need the education, and they'll be appreciative if you come in with the right attitude and the right mentality.
Right. So
and that does, go ahead.
I'm going to go to another question, but I did want to say that this just shows how one person, that means Lori, who had this idea, managed to get a group of people, and of course there's a lot of work on a lot of people's part, but it's how Margaret Mead said, that a group of people can change anything. I mean, that's how this country was built. That's how anything got started in this world that made a difference, was by one person having an idea and finding other like-minded people and together making a huge difference.
I actually love that quote, that Margaret Mead quote. I can't remember it exactly, but a committed group of citizens can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. And that's an interesting thought. And I have to tell you that inspired me. And the other thing that inspired me, I don't know the age of the people on this call, but do you guys remember the old Schoolhouse Rock? And there was one called I'm Just a Bill. Yeah, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, I was watching that, and there's this line in there that talks about how does a bill get started? It's a whole thing about how a bill becomes a law, and it talks about how does a bill get started. And it says an average citizen has an idea, and there's this light bulb that goes off over this cartoon guy, and he goes to his legislature and tells him about the idea. And I watched that, and I just kept thinking, well, I have an idea. I have an idea. So that was my other inspiration.
That's great. Okay, here's a question from Tony Cochran in Snellville. Do all insurance companies limit the number of visits for speech therapy and occupational therapy and so forth?
No, they do not. That really depends on the policy that is agreed to between your insurance company and your employer. I would say the first thing to do if you're encountering that is ask your employer for a copy of the entire policy, because A, you want to make sure that that limitation really is in there. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir, and you all know that, especially once there's an autism code on your child, the automatic response to every claim you file is denied. I actually had an insurer admit to me one time that they didn't even look to see what the treatment was. They just saw the autism code and hit denied. So you really have to fight several layers of erroneous denial sometimes, even if there is the coverage provided in your policy. But get a copy of the entire policy, not the summary plan description, but the entire policy, and read it to see if there is a visit limitation in your policy. If there is, then you're stuck unless you can convince your employer to renegotiate that term, because it's certainly not universal. It is definitely not universal that speech and OT and PT are limited.
Okay, great answer. Here comes another question. Stacy Waywinter from Haven, Florida. Absolutely no insurance coverage for therapies on my 9-year-old son, who is diagnosed with HFA, high-functioning autism. BC and BS of Texas is the insurance company. I tried to get Medicaid and was denied. I make $28,000 a year, and they said we made too much money. I hired a lawyer based out in California. She filed for disability. He was denied that, too, currently in appeal. I decided to start studying autism as much as possible to do home therapies. Any help would be appreciated.
Well, this question was from Florida. Is that right?
Well, they're living in Florida, but I guess...
Okay, well, Florida is one of those states that just passed a mandate a few months ago. So, what's that?
How could they find out more about that?
I believe that in Florida the mandate has not become effective yet, but it might be January 1. I don't have that bill right in front of me right now, but there is a mandate in Florida, and so your child should be getting benefits as soon as that becomes effective. Your Department of Insurance can give you more information. I'm big on the Department of Insurance. You guys will probably hear that a few times. But they have consumer information. They have healthcare information. Every Department of Insurance has this.
I've never heard of a Department of Insurance. What the heck is that?
Well, it might be called something different in California. I think Minnesota's is called something like the Department of Commercial Concerns or something. I don't remember exactly, but every state has some regulatory agency, a state agency that regulates insurance. If you don't know what it is for your state, go on your official state government website and you should be able to find it there. So, in Florida, contact the Department of Insurance or contact your employer. Again, to find out if your employer is self-insured, and if they're not self-insured, then they should be subject to the mandate in Florida. Now, there are some other small exceptions. I believe the Florida mandate has an exclusion for small businesses with fewer than 50 employees.
Right.
But otherwise, there could be some help on the way.
Okay, I have a question for you.
Okay.
I was going to suggest something to the listeners out there, but maybe you have some advice on that. I actually belong to a Yahoo group called Autism Insurance Information at yahoo.com, and really it's just other parents who write in and ask each other questions and try and figure things out to help each other out. You know, if it turns out they have the same insurance companies or in the same state. So I don't know. Have you heard of that group?
I have, and I believe I'm a member. There are a couple of different Yahoo groups that have sprung up and then kind of died over the course of the last few years dealing with autism insurance. But if that's an active one, was that just started maybe 3 or 4 months ago?
Maybe a year, maybe 9 months. I mean, it isn't that old.
Okay.
It hasn't been that active, but it's been a lot more active recently.
Well, there are a couple that exist, and at least one or two are active. So, yeah, I do recommend that. I think that's a great idea.
I guess you just have to remember that most of the people on there are not attorneys either. But as I said, a lot of the things, it's really just figuring information out. So sometimes a couple of people together can figure something out better and save you time if someone else has gone through the hassle. So I'm going to name this, I'm going to spell out this Yahoo group so people can look it up if they want to join.
Good.
So it's Autism _insurance_ information@yahoogroups.com. So again, autism_insurance_information@yahoogroups.com. Okay, back to the questions.
Okay.
Here's from Christine in Saline. My question is, why does Michigan still consider autism to be a psychological disability rather than a medical disability? I left Michigan and moved to Ohio 5 years ago and have recently returned to find that it's still considered a psychological disability. Therefore, the medical doctors, like the neurologist I saw in Ohio, is not covered in Michigan. And honestly, my son doesn't need a psychiatrist to tell me he needs to see a neurologist. Isn't it a dysfunction of the brain?
Yeah. I wish I knew the answer to why Michigan considers that. Michigan is another one of those states that is working on autism insurance reform. And most of these bills define autism as a neurobiological disorder or something to that effect, something to get it out of the mental health category. So, you know, I think that as soon as Michigan gets its bill passed, that should take care of that issue. But, you know, I wouldn't take your insurer's denial as the end of the game. You call them back, you have a copy of the diagnostic codes and criteria in front of you, and fight it out.
It's hard to always find the energy to do these things because, of course, as parents of kids with autism, we don't have that energy all the time. But when you do feel that energy, you got to do these things because it's really important.
Well, that's really a very good point, Chantal, because you know, a lot of nights when I was working on my own bill, I remember thinking, you know, how in the world am I even going to make it through dinner and bath tonight, much less work on advocacy for a piece of legislation? You know, we're the people who least have the time to do this kind of work, and yet we're the only ones who have the motivation that we do. So, I sympathize with people because I myself have let claims go by that I know I probably could have fought and won, but who had the time and energy?
Right. But that's why when you're working on something like a bill, you're working with other people, you kind of get energy from those other people.
You do. And I certainly had some other parents in South Carolina who kept me afloat on the days and weeks when I was just too tired to keep going. And they said, no, you've got to keep going, and they helped in so many ways, and I'm very grateful for that.
And I'm sure they're very grateful that you started it all.
Well, it's so exciting to see it catching on all around the country, and just exciting to see coverage for, you know, for a lot of kids. I mean, in my own situation, because my husband and I are both lawyers, you know, it certainly has not been easy. It's been very difficult financially, but we have been able to provide my son with treatment. And the ones that just absolutely break my heart are the kids who just, you know, no matter how much their parents want to, they don't have anything to sacrifice to provide treatment. And those kids who just weren't getting anything at all were the ones that really broke my heart and were the inspiration for this bill.
That's great. I'm sure that they're all very appreciative. Now, here's got lots more questions here. This is Patricia from Montgomery. An increasingly PPO-centered insurance environment, how do you deal with an increasing number of providers who are opting off of PPO boards and or becoming private pay?
Well, you know, I look at this in terms of supply and demand. I know in our own state, I'm not sure, we don't know what state this person is from. Is that right?
It said Montgomery, and I assume that's Montgomery, Alabama.
Oh, okay. Well,
I could be wrong.
Once you have some kind of funding stream in place, like insurance, or Medicaid, or any other funding stream other than the parent's back pocket to help cover some of these providers, well, then your supply of providers increases. We've seen in South Carolina, we've gotten a lot more therapists who work with kids with autism over the past year, even since our bill passed, because suddenly they say, oh man, if we go to South Carolina, there'll be plenty of work because insurance is footing the bill and Medicaid is footing the bill. So, you know, it is a supply and demand sort of thing. Outside of having the insurance mandate in your state, you know, I'm not really sure what to say about providers who are opting out of PPOs and becoming strictly private pay. You know, apparently there are enough people there. Their rates are such that enough people can afford to pay them that they can stay in business. Whenever that ceases to be the case, then they won't demand strictly private pay. I that wasn't much of an answer, but I don't really have a solution to that problem.
Okay, I've got a couple of questions from the North Pole in Alaska. Here's a couple from Ian. How can you make an insurance company cover autism-related mental health? Not knowing how to properly word it or ask them how is this done? You know, first I'm going to ask the first question he asked, because I think then you'll understand more why he's asking this question.
Okay.
I have a son who has TRICARE, and he is currently in a facility due to other mental conditions. TRICARE stated that his condition is more than they can cover. How can that be? I've never heard of an insurance company denying due to the extremeness of it. And then he also asked, how can you make an insurance company cover an autism-related mental health issue, not knowing how to properly word it, or ask them, how do you do that?
Hmm. Well, I know that TRICARE does provide some autism benefits. I'm not military, so I'm not intimately familiar with the terms of that particular policy. But they do have mental health coverage, and they do cover autism specifically. I know they have ABA coverage up to a couple $1,000s a month. So, and yes, I agree with Ian that I've never heard the excuse, well, your child is too sick or too in too bad a shape. So, again, it sounds like one of those things where you just need to appeal. You know, sometimes they give flat-out bogus excuses or justifications for their denials. I mean, how many of you have gotten, if you filed ABA claims in particular, we got denials that said we can't cover that because this treatment is educational in nature, not medical. Or we can't cover that because the provider that you used was not licensed. Well, there is no such thing as a license for an ABA provider. At least in South Carolina, there's not. And that's the case in most states, or most or all. I can't remember if it's all. But and then we would get denials that said, well, this treatment is experimental in nature. Well, as to ABA, I don't know what they mean by experimental, but it's been in use for many decades now on kids with autism, and that's hardly what I call experimental.
And so, it's recognized as being one of the techniques that has shown by research to be effective.
Absolutely. I mean, it's got evidence-based studies behind it, recommended by the Surgeon General, endorsed by the AAP. There were just all kinds of reasons why it was bogus for the insurance company to call it experimental and deny it on that basis. But you know what? If nobody holds their feet to the fire, they can do whatever they want. And in fact, that whole experimental denial is one of the things that really just incited me so much to spur me onto action, because I started thinking, well, who gets to define what experimental means? And I did some legal research on it to try to find the definition of experimental. Well, guess what? Guess who defines what experimental means? The insurance industry. And each insurance company was defining experimental to mean whatever they wanted it to mean. And so, of course, they'll deny it on that basis. And you just have to dig beneath the policy and dig beneath the explanation and contest it. If it's not experimental, then write them back and say, actually, you know, I disagree with your assessment, and let me tell you why. And if your child's being denied because he's got mental issues in addition to his autism, ask them to show you where in the policy does it say that this means he can't get coverage, because I bet it's not there.
Right. Okay, we have a lot more questions here. They're pouring in.
Okay.
This one's been here for a while, so I'm going to – it's from Albany, New York. What are the treatments Ryan Laws helps family receive through their insurance? Does it help with therapies like hippotherapy or horseback riding? Where can I find the law in writing? Because I'd like to look at it. Thanks so much.
Wow. I wish I could email it. Well, wait a minute. I think I've got it on my old blog. So let me see if I'm going to, while I'm talking, I'm going to try to pull it up on my blog and make sure it's there. As to whether it covers hippotherapy, oddly enough, the answer is I don't know. Because, as I mentioned at the outset, I wrote the bill in a very broad way so as not to define exactly what therapies were to be covered. Again, I thought it was not my place to specify a list of therapies that I thought should be covered. I thought it was not the legislature's place to specify what it thought should be covered, and I thought it wasn't the insurance company's place. I thought it was the doctor's place. The doctor who oversees the child's treatment, and that could be a developmental pediatrician or even just a pediatrician or perhaps a psychologist, but whoever is overseeing that child's treatment to prescribe what the doctor thinks is necessary, and then that's what insurance is supposed to cover. You know, I call it broad. Some people might call it vague, but I think that's a good thing because the other issue you have is, what if in, you know, 4 or 5 years there's some new type of treatment modality, some new therapy that's proven to be highly effective? Well, the bill is broad enough that it can encompass changes in the science. And so under a bill like Ryan's Law, basically you just have to work with your physician to, if you want something particular covered for your child, you need to go to your physician and say, I'd like for you to write a prescription for X, and get the physician to recommend it. Typically, physicians are pretty good about working with our families. Many of them recognize that mother knows best, and that we're looking for the most effective therapies for our kids, and that's what we're going to ask you to recommend so that we can get insurance coverage. Now, while let me see if I can pull up this blog, and I'll give you the exact address so that you can find the text of Ryan's Law on there. Yeah, it is www.scautisminsurancebill.blogspot.com. Again, that's SC as in South Carolina. www.scautisminsurancebill.blogspot.com. This is a blog that I started right when we had the bill introduced, a very, very informal blog that I'm almost embarrassed to point you to because it's just kind of my stream of consciousness rants as we went through the process. But I am fairly certain that I've got the entire text of Ryan's Law on this blog. I'm scrolling right now to make sure.
Okay, here's another question from Wendy in Spring City. Will HVOT, hyperbaric oxygen therapy, I guess that's what the HVOT stands for, be covered by insurance under the new autism laws recently passed in Pennsylvania? This treatment could be beneficial to our son, but it is extremely expensive and not yet covered by insurance.
Again, the answer is we don't know. The Pennsylvania bill is written a little more narrowly than the South Carolina bill. It lists out specific treatments. I'm recalling this from memory right now, but I think the Pennsylvania bill offers treatment for pharmacy care, psychiatric care, psychological care, therapeutic care, which is meant speech therapy, occupational therapy, and physical therapy, and then habilitative and rehabilitative care. And so that is a little bit of a catch-all, but those five particular types of therapy, I believe, are listed in the Pennsylvania bill. So the issue then is convincing your insurer that HBOT is a habilitative or rehabilitative type of care. You know, that particular treatment, HBOT, is neither included nor excluded by the terms of the bill. It's the kind of thing that you have to make an argument. Well, that was meant to be included by the legislature. It doesn't say that it's not included. It fits within the terms and the intent of the bill. And you have to show that it's been shown to be effective and that it's evidence-based. You know, insurers are not going to cover just everything. And you've got to understand that they have to, they can't cover every possible thing that everybody comes up with. But just like ABA has finally kind of tipped over into an acknowledged, respectable treatment that insurers will now recognize, when HBOT has that sort of science behind it, then I suspect that it will start to be covered. And I don't know if we've reached that point with HBOT or not. I just don't know the science enough.
Okay. Here's Lisa Garbutt from Tuckerton has a question. I want my daughter to be seen by a Dan doctor. I have BCBS Horizon Blue Card PPO and Medicaid. The Dan doctor accepts Medicaid, but does not accept BCBS. I could pay the doctor for the visit and wait to get reimbursed the 80%, but I'm a single mom and can't afford it. Is there a way around this? BCBS is my primary.
Yeah, well, probably not if it is your Dan doctor's decision not to accept the insurance. I think that's what you said in the question. In that case, it's not a matter of convincing the insurance company or your employer to contract differently with the insurance company. It's a matter of convincing the Dan doctor to accept insurance. Presumably the Dan doctor just thinks, well, it's too much trouble. You have to wait too long to get payments from insurance companies, so I don't want to fool with it. And maybe the Dan doctor is not taking into account that some parents can't afford to float the money while we file the claims on our own. You know, you always have the option. Even if a doctor won't accept insurance, you can pay for it and file the claim on your own. But I understand your concerns that, you know, it's a lot of money to float while you're waiting on insurance to pay you back. So, unfortunately, each provider is entitled to make a decision about whether they're willing to accept insurance or not. So the best advice I can give you is to appeal to the provider. Just like we often have to appeal to our insurance company, you should appeal to the provider, to the Dan doctor, and explain that you would really want to use his services, but you can't under those terms.
Okay, here's Dillard Stedman from Orono. I'm not sure if I'm, or maybe that's the whole name, Stedman Orono. I'm not quite sure. What can retired military families using CHAMP VA do to get the best out of the system they have for us in place? They only pay for what is FDA approved.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know a lot about the retired military either. I do know that there have been some legislative efforts specifically on behalf of military retirees to make the benefit equivalent to the benefit for active military. Karen Driscoll, a Marine mom up in the D.C. area, has made that her mission over the past, I don't know how long, many months. And I don't recall the status of that. I don't recall if that is something that passed or is in the works right now. But that's about the extent of my knowledge on the military retiree plan. The one thing I will say is it's a fabulous time to be petitioning your legislators, either your state legislators if you're after a state mandate, or your Congress people if you're working on a federal level like with military. It's a wonderful time to be petitioning them for anything having to do with autism. Because maybe you noticed, but autism has been all over the news and the presidential debates and everything else lately. You know, I feel like we have our time has finally come. And a colleague sent me an email the night of the last presidential debate and said, you know, I just watched the debate. Did I just see our two presidential candidates trying to out-autism each other? And, you know, they were. They both talking about what they're going to do for autism. It's been mentioned. It was mentioned at all the conventions. So we're the hot-button issue right now. And if you're asking me a question and I'm telling you there's nothing you can do under your policy as written, well, write your legislator or write Congress and see if we can get it fixed on a structural level.
That's true. Here's a question from Ireland, from Paul Ogbidlor, from Dublin. I have two sons with autism, 7 and 5 years old. They both attend special schools here in Ireland, but I'm not satisfied with the facilities and treatment available here. I have researched and found that there are more and better facilities in the USA and Canada. Do you know of any program that I can avail of in order to relocate to those countries? It's
no.
Not really an insurance question, but it's an interesting one nonetheless.
Yeah, I wish I could think of something off the top of my head to assist with that, but I'm not an expert in that.
I do want to say, though, I never lived in Ireland, though I absolutely loved Dublin when I visited it. I lived in France, and I lived in England, and I lived in California, and obviously I find that here it's easier for many things for autism, but only because I've availed myself of the legislature and knowing the laws. But I do want to say in terms of medical care that although perhaps they don't have as much choice in Ireland, at least you have a lot of things that you can have that here in America it's really hard if you have no insurance. If you have no insurance, you really have nothing here. So, and I've noticed from moving around in different countries, too, that sometimes we think that the grass is greener on the other side. But and even though treatment and therapy is important, there's a lot of other things that are very important to having children with autism, and that has to do with having a community and having family around you. It was really tough for me when I lived places where I had no family and no support in that sense, because if you didn't have respite, then I really had nobody else to turn to. But then I don't know, what this particular family is going through, because sometimes just because you have family doesn't mean that they can actually help you either. But my heart just goes out to everybody. It's so hard. Nothing's easy for any of us, and some of us have it tougher than others.
Yeah.
So I wish I could help.
That's a very, very good point. Very well said. You know, we were living in Washington D.C. at the time. My son was diagnosed just before his second birthday, and we only made it there another year or two before we moved to South Carolina, specifically to be closer to my family, because, boy, the supports mean everything. And certainly there was a wider availability of doctors and providers and specialists and everything else in D.C., But my life has been easier in South Carolina because of that family support. So I echo your sentiment that you want to consider a broad range of factors before you pick up and move for the services that might be available somewhere else.
It's also really important when it comes to school districts. I mean, when we moved here from Europe, we moved across the street from the school that had the class that was the best class known in the area for autism because, you know, here in America, you have the right to go to the school in your school district, you know, within your school district. And since it was also our neighborhood school, they couldn't deny us. Well, what happened after a couple of years is the teacher left because she was fed up. And I had not researched how the actual school district was organized. And remember, I was new to the United States in terms of the educational system and my children because they had been born and raised overseas. And I was really flabbergasted because it turned out that the administration it wasn't like their class that they were really behind. So when the teacher left, everything just fell apart. And that really made me think about how when you're researching where you're going to live, you also have to look not at just the class and the teacher, but at the whole, how does the school district support its staff or not support its staff? How is the administration in terms of hearing what the teachers and aides say they need in the classrooms besides saying listening to what the parents need? So these are things I know don't really have to do with insurance, but are important when you're looking at where you want to live. I'm going to ask you. Go ahead.
No, just agreeing.
Okay. Here's a question from Erica from Redmond. Why is autism not covered? Our insurance in Washington covers zero medical bills related to autism. It is sad to say even the evaluations are out of pocket.
Well, why is autism not covered? I come back to, because nobody has forced the insurance companies to cover it. And that's really about all it is. I struggled with that very question for a couple of years before I wrote my bill of why in the world it wasn't covered. But, you know, if you'll allow me to get philosophical on you for a moment, insurance companies are private businesses. Their goal is to maximize profit. In fact, they have an obligation to their shareholders to maximize profits. And so if nobody tells them they have to cover autism, then why would they choose to? It certainly is not in line with their goal of making more money. And so, you know, that's really what it came down to for me is unless somebody tells them they have to, they're not going to. So you have to get your legislature to tell them you have to. You have to get your legislature to say, look, it's in the public interest of our state to have insurance companies covering kids with autism. Because if they're not covered, then these kids end up costing the state much, much more money in the long run in terms of special supports and special education and institutionalization. And that's not to mention the entire humane factor of just that it's the right thing to do for these children. So the answer to why it's not covered is no good reason. Now, Washington State, I have spent my entire day today working on the fine details of the language of an insurance mandate for Washington State. I have a deadline of midnight tonight to submit this bill to what's called your Sunrise Review Panel in Washington State. So your state is very actively considering a Ryan's Law-type mandate, and I've got a pretty good feeling about Washington State. I've got a 15-page report sitting on my desk right now about what Washington has, how they've responded to the proposed bill, and there are some advocates who are working really hard and visiting with legislators. So whoever wrote this question, if you're in Washington State, look up WashingtonAutismAdvocacy.com because that's a network of parents who are working really hard to get the insurance mandate passed at the beginning of 2009. And I think there's a very good chance for it.
Okay, that's really good. Thank you for explaining all that. Okay.
I hope I answered the question. I kind of forgot what the question was. I went off on a tangent, but.
No, but it's good information. Okay, so here are a couple of questions that have to do with Medi-Cal or SSI. So the first one is from Kim McLean in Long Beach, which is in California. My daughter has Medi-Cal in California. Is there anything this insurance will do for us? I don't have a private insurance and cannot afford the premiums to go independent. I have a little something I can say about this if you want
yeah,
to
well, why don't you take this one, Chantal, because I don't know Medi-Cal in particular.
Okay, well, I'm not a, I'm not an attorney, so I should say the same thing that you did. But from my personal experience, because I'm based in California, is that I didn't think that Medi-Cal could do anything for me. And then I realized I do have some private insurance, but Medi-Cal actually kicks in when private insurance doesn't. So even like, for example, my son has some medications that he needs, anti-seizure medication, very light dose, but still, you know, it adds up after a while, and we would have to pay a certain amount of it. And I found out Medi-Cal picks up the 20% not covered by my insurance. And then the other thing, because my son turned 18, so he's no longer he doesn't have access to certain doctors we were using before because they only work with kids that are, you know, younger than 18. He's not a kid anymore. Well, I found a dentist in San Diego who's absolutely wonderful with special needs kids. Her office is just wonderful, and it's on Medi-Cal. I don't pay a penny. And she's much better with him than the dentist we had before, which, you know, was always like, you know, I had to do all this paperwork for insurance. So I think that what you can do, you can find providers who will accept Medi-Cal. Some of them are really good, and I think it's really important to talk to and connect with other families in your area. I don't know I think in Long Beach there is an ASA chapter. I'm not sure how active that chapter is, but I would look there. I would also ask, TACA, which is talk about curing autism. They usually deal with biomedical, but I'm sure they talk about, you know, how do you get insurance, or, you know, you can put questions on their list servers about are there Medi-Cal providers there that could be helpful or that are good in my area. Again, that's TACA, talk about curing autism, and also ASA. Look at any other support groups, too, and maybe even on the Moms Fighting Autism list, you can put a question out there. But I was really surprised to find a really excellent dentist who took Medi-Cal, and I'm sure right now, in fact, my husband's company switched to another insurer, and I realized that the doctor that's been treating my son ever since we moved here, she doesn't take that insurance. I'm going to have to find another doctor, and I'm lucky because I still have insurance, but it's such a pain because, you know, when you change companies and you change work, and luckily in this economy, my husband still has work, but, you know, when you change insurance companies and you have to change doctors, especially when you have kids like we have, it's so difficult. But, so sometimes it's good to find the one person who takes Medi-Cal because once you have Medi-Cal, you know you always have it if it's based on your child's disability. So if they're not sure to recover, they'll still have it.
Good.
Did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No, the comment you made about Medi-Cal will pick up the part that private insurance doesn't pick up. I mean, that should be the way Medicaid operates, regardless of what state you're in. Medicaid is generally considered the payer of last resort. So your private insurance is supposed to kick in and pay first. But whatever private insurance doesn't cover, Medicaid should cover. And if you don't have private insurance, then Medicaid should cover. Now, that's not unlimited because, for instance, unless your state has a special waiver program, Medicaid generally doesn't cover ABA, for instance. But for general medical treatment, Medicaid should be covering it.
Right.
If you find the right provider, like you said.
And just like this other person on this list talked about having a DAN doctor that would take Medi-Cal, that's absolutely wonderful. So maybe this person in Long Beach, if she's looking for a DAN doctor, can actually find through TACA a DAN doctor. I mean, it's kind of hard to know what kind of care she's looking for, but there are ways to find out. Just like this dentist, I found out just by talking to people. Okay, and someone else asks, this is Eva or Ava from Pittsburgh. If a child has a disability and receives SSI, are they eligible to receive autism services through insurance?
Yes. Being on SSI should not impact your insurance coverage.
Okay. All right. Here we go. Quite a few more questions. Wow. Jang De La Rosa from MD. I have a 7-year-old with PBD, NOS, and ADHD combined, also expressive and receptive language disorder. His academic skills is within grade level, which is second grade, but he can't focus and he's inattentive. I read some studies and research that FM device addresses inattention, CAPD, and autism. However, we asked our county if we can try this for my son, and they denied us, saying Baltimore County does not support it other than hearing impaired kids. What should I do to push to make them try this device to see if it will work or not?
You're cracking up on me just a little bit, Chantal. I heard the bulk of the question. I didn't hear what the specific thing was that they wanted Baltimore to try.
Well, it's I don't know what kind of device this is, but it says I've read some studies and research that FM device addresses inattention, CAPD, and autism. However, when we asked our county to try this for our son, they denied it, saying Baltimore County does not support it other than for hearing impaired kids. But I don't know what an FM device is. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not. But generally, as to any sort of device or treatment that you're asking, either a state agency or the school system to provide, you know, the more evidence of effectiveness that you can provide, the more likely it is that they're going to do it. I mean, it always troubles me a little bit when a school district or a county says, we don't do that. You know, there's not supposed to be a particular menu that you can select off of. Programs are supposed to be individually designed for your child, as you know. And too often, parents just take, we don't do that, as the final answer, when instead you should try to negotiate, but in a pleasant way. Equip yourself to be in a strong negotiation position by showing other agencies or districts that have provided this device or provided the therapy, and showing that it's been effective.
Okay. Here is Cindy from Burbank. What hope is there for those of us who are paying privately for insurance and now have the pre-existing condition, ASD, Autism Spectrum Disorders, as far as having any treatments covered? Sadly, this is through Kaiser.
I believe that as long as there is not a gap in your coverage, then the pre-existing condition limitation does not adversely affect you. I don't mean to be dispensing legal advice here, but I believe that when I have looked into this particular issue in the past, whenever you change insurance, the new insurance company spits out a letter to you saying you're not covered for any pre-existing conditions for a period of 1 year or something to that effect. But if you read the fine print or you go back and you look at the policy, you see that they're not permitted to apply that pre-existing condition exclusion if you have maintained private insurance with no gap from your last insurer to your current one. And I guess I can't be sure that that's universally true, but at least in the one instance where I've looked into that, that was true.
Okay. I thought, too, in the state of California that they weren't allowed to deny children for pre-existing conditions. I know that that was true when we moved here 10 years ago. I don't know about now, but because that was one of my major concerns when we moved here from overseas, especially since we had, you know, insurance coverage over there. I mean, it was socialized medicine, and so I was very concerned about that. But I was told that here in California, it was a child under the age of 18 that they couldn't deny for a pre-existing condition. Perhaps that's changed since then.
Well, that might be right. I'm not familiar with that particular law. Knowing that California is a pretty progressive state, it would not surprise me at all if California had passed a particular provision or a mandate to bar pre-existing conditions for kids. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
Okay, so here's one from Bob in Detroit. Where can I get a list of codes for BCBS of Michigan?
Well, if you're talking about CPT codes, which are the current procedural terminology, I think is what it stands for, those are national. It doesn't vary from insurer to insurer. And let's see, I think it's the American Medical Association. I'll check and see if I can find that while I'm talking too. There is a national association, and I believe it might be the AMA, that puts out CPT codes. Let me see if I can find that.
Okay.
And then there are also diagnostic codes, which for autism, of course, are found in the DSM-4, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. So the diagnostic codes are in the DSM, and the CPT codes are, I believe, put out by the AMA, and again, they are they're uniform nationally. Yeah, I just found it. It's the American Medical Association, www.ama. Looks like it's AMA-ASSN for American Medical Association .org. Or maybe just Google it. And there's a link on there to CPT codes.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
Hey, you know, let me just add a bit here. Nobody asked this question, but one of the things that I am hoping to work on is establishing CPT codes specifically for ABA. Because even where we have gotten coverage, you know, providers are having to rig it to, like, try to submit bills using some code that doesn't really fit. You know, they'll use, like, family counseling or consultative services or just trying to put a square peg in a round hole. And so I have talked with the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, the BACB, and said, let's get together and propose some new codes because this is a legitimate, recognized, acknowledged treatment for which there is now funding. So let's create codes to make it to ease the claims procedure for providers and for families. My understanding is that it takes a couple of years to get codes through the entire process of being adopted and put into use, but that's on the agenda.
Cool. Okay, and here's a question from Charlie Caldwell. Noonan, from Noonan, I guess. What is the status of litigation advocacy for children with autism in the state of Georgia?
Litigation advocacy. I'm not really aware of any, to tell you the truth, in the state of Georgia. There is legislation pending in the state of Georgia. Again, Georgia is one of those states that is actively pursuing a Ryan's Law type bill for 2009, but I'm not familiar with any type of concerted litigation effort on behalf of special needs kids. I tell you, there's so much to be done from a legal perspective in the autism arena. You know, as I mentioned at the outset, when I even started this project, if you will, I wasn't sure whether to focus on insurance or education or Medicaid, and all of those areas need attention, both in terms of reforming the legislation that's on the books, as well as litigating particular cases. And it's really just a matter of resources. You know, it's my great, great delight that just within the last month, I have left my job at the Department of Justice. Now, it's not my great delight that I left it, because I loved my job at the Department of Justice, but it's my great delight that I've been afforded the opportunity to work full-time in autism advocacy now. So really, only for the last few weeks, I've been able to spend my days doing this and thinking about this, rather than doing it as a volunteer in the middle of the night after you get the kids put to bed. But even being able to devote my own full-time resources to it, there's just so much more than even a couple of lawyers can handle. So we just got to keep hoping that that more money is raised, that more awareness is created, that the government puts more resources into it so we can continue to fight these problems.
Here's a question, another question from Ireland, from the same gentleman who asked about the treatment, you know, how he could get to the States. And it doesn't really have to do with insurance, but it kind of breaks my heart to ask this question.
Okay.
Is there any breakthrough in the treatment of autism? I'm getting very worried and frustrated. I love my sons to bits, and I will do everything and anything to get the best treatment for them.
Hmm. Wow. I wish I had a magic revelation to give on the phone tonight.
Go ahead. I just spent the last 4 days at the Defeat Autism Now conference in San Diego, and there's new things coming out all the time in terms of treatment and therapy. But the thing is, more and more that they discover new things, I get the feeling that more and more we discover how individualized the treatment needs to be, just like it's for education. And so there's not one magic pill or one magic wand, and it's really about trying to make sense of what there is that makes sense with the kind of child that you have or what kind of symptoms your child is showing. And again, I'm not that familiar with Ireland, but I do know that I wonder if this gentleman has heard of the magazine called The Autism File, which has been in the UK for 10 years and has just now come to the States. There's a lot of information available in that magazine, and maybe they can help you with more resources over there. You can write to the people who work at the magazine. I know I'm saying this because I'm now the director of marketing in the States, but I've been writing for them an Ask Chantal column, and now we have an Ask, you know, the doctor is in, and you can write to medical doctors there at the Autism File. You can check out their website. But, again, it's really about figuring out what makes sense for your child or your children. Do you have anything to add about that?
No, not especially. I agree with your assessment. And, you know, we ourselves have been through a lot of different we've tried a lot of different things. And, you know, my son is still more on the severe end. He's largely nonverbal. He's 7. And yet, some of the behavior treatment definitely has done wonders for him. It's not made him indistinguishable from his peers, but it's made him much more able to function. It's made our lives easier. It's made us able to live a family life that we're happy with.
Yeah, a lot of times that's what the goal should be, is trying to get to the best for your child, or to have your child their potential. I always have to laugh because now my son has learned how to type out and communicate, because he's basically mostly nonverbal, and we've found out that he's really smart. I mean, you know, not a genius, but, you know, normal intelligence, and, you know, after many years. But he's writing a book now, and you want to know what the title of his book is? It's Still Autistic After All These Years.
Oh, that's great.
I know. It's kind of, I think he hears because, you know, because I write books and because I also do a radio show, so I review books sometimes on my radio show on Autism One Radio. And so I always get all these books in the house. So I guess he hears me talking about these books from these parents who have written about having been able to recover their child. And, you know, which is great, which I'm not knocking, but, you know, he's 19. So our goal for him is to help him reach his potential. And, you know, if he has any issues that we can help that are medically bothering him, and also if we can give him strategies to be more and more independent, that's great. But he still has his own personality, and his autism is part of that personality. And he does have such a great sense of humor. And he keeps saying, nope, that's what the name of my book is going to be, Still Autistic After All These Years.
That's very funny. He's obviously very witty.
He is very witty, and he has good self-esteem, and I think that's really an important aspect, no matter what child you have. Okay, so here's some more questions. Michael Friga from Ithaca, and I hope people forgive me if I'm mispronouncing their names. I'm not always good at pronouncing names. Do any of the proposals for autism insurance identify board-certified behavior analysts to provide medically necessary therapy?
Yes, I think that some of them do. Actually, the one that I mentioned I've been working on all day, the one for Washington State, does specifically refer to certification by the Behavior Analyst Certification Board. So there's a specific reference to BCBA there. And again, I'm speaking off the top of my head, but I believe that Arizona might make specific reference to board certification. I definitely have worked closely with Jerry Shook, the executive director of the BACB, on some of this legislation, both in the drafting phase and in the implementation phase. So even if that language doesn't appear in a bill specifically, it might appear in the regulations that implement the bill or in the documents that the insurance companies put out afterwards.
Right. Gosh, there seems to be so much to do, but you've been active in so many different areas. I don't understand how you can raise your children and still sleep at night. I know you didn't have time for dinner today, and I know you've got something to write before midnight, huh?
No, well, I do, but I'm eating Cheez-Its as we speak, so I'm sorry if you hear me crunching. You know, dinner doesn't always have to be meat and three. Sometimes it can be a bag of chips.
That's a good point. Okay, here's one from Heidi Wright from Kingsport, Tennessee. How is Tennessee in this process? Has anyone started a mandate for insurance coverage for autism? What about if your child is diagnosed with developmental delay? What's covered there?
Let me see. I'm not sure about Tennessee. I think there has been a bill. I have a vague recollection of something called the Autism Equity Act that was introduced in Tennessee, and I'm not sure what happened to it. I am, as we speak, going onto the website www.autismvote.org. This is a sister website or part of Autism Speaks, and autismvotes.org is the website that tracks legislation and more than that. But there is a map, and you can click on whatever state. So I have just clicked on Tennessee. And it looks like there is not a bill pending in Tennessee right now, but we're looking for people to take that on in Tennessee. So if you're interested, whoever sent me that question, go on to Autism Votes and send us an email to let us know that you might be interested in working on that. Autism Speaks Government Relations Department, of which I am now a part as of the last few weeks, is recruiting volunteers in all 50 states who are looking to help this effort. And you don't have to do it alone, because we're here to support you. The two of us lawyers and some political grassroots organizers are looking for volunteers for all the states so that we can help get this passed in all the states.
How do they contact you or that office?
If you go on autismvotes.org, there is a link that just says send us an email. And there's probably a link to my address. I'm not even sure. My address is lori.unum@autismspeaks.org. So you can write to me or just click directly from autismvotes.org. And whether or not you would like to be the champion for your state, I encourage all of you to go on to autismvotes.org and sign up for action alerts, because there will be federal initiatives as well, like the Combating Autism Act and some other things. And we hope to take this insurance mandate federal as well. And so we will be looking for people in every state, in every district of every state, to be willing to talk to their legislators. And this is the database that we're compiling to come up with that list of people. So please do, if you're not already registered, go on to autismvotes.org and sign up.
Now, I wanted to ask you, because I can't remember if this is from Autism Speaks or other organizations I've been a part of here in California. I've been on different lists where when there is a need to call for action and for people to call and to write, you're alerted. And then what I love about the way that things are organized now on the Internet is that they actually send you a letter, and they actually tell you who the people are that you could be sending that to or who you should be calling or faxing. Is that the way it would work with Autism Speaks?
That's exactly what this is, and it's a wonderful service. With this Autism Votes, we not only can do that on a national level if we need people in various congressional districts, but say if we get a volunteer in Tennessee who wants to take on this insurance legislation in Tennessee, we'll not only write the bill for you and help you get organized, anytime you need to send a message to other Tennesseans that they need to contact their legislature, we'll send an action alert like you just described, specific to Tennessee. Tell people, if they have registered on Autism Votes, we can tell them, here's your House member, here's your senator, this is how you contact them. So it really makes it very convenient to be an active advocate in the legislature.
Yeah, and I know that those times when I've received those kind of alerts from different organizations, it's taken me maybe 5 minutes to do, and I just feel really good. And obviously there's other ways that we're all participating in helping our families, but also in helping the autism community, but that one doesn't take very long, and we really need to have those voices out there.
It is amazing what a difference it really makes to the legislators, because I think most of them are just accustomed to getting their information from lobbyists, from professional paid advocates who are there to advocate whatever they're being paid to advocate. When all of a sudden real people start contacting the legislators, it makes a huge impression on them. And as I walked around the State House in South Carolina, I would have, I'd hear legislators saying, oh, there comes the autism moms. Don't say no to them. Whatever you do, don't say no. Because they knew how many people were interested in this bill because of all the constituents who wrote and emailed and otherwise contacted their legislators.
It's so important. Okay, here's another question from Dawn in Baltimore. Vision therapy is not covered unless it replaces some sort of surgery. Wow. So I guess she's talking about vision therapy not being covered in her insurance unless it replaces some kind of surgery.
Well, where did you say this person is from?
Baltimore.
Baltimore? Okay, well, Baltimore is, Maryland is not one of the states that already has an autism-specific mandate, but it is one of the states that's trying to pass one in 09. So, you know, maybe there's help on the way. And, again, most of these bills, some of them are more specific than others. I'm not aware of any bills that list out vision therapy, for example. But, again, it's a matter of convincing your insurer that it is an effective, proven treatment and that it works for your child and that it's medically necessary for your child. But that's once you get a mandate in place.
Okay. I have another question from Stacy Way from Winter Haven, Florida. She asks, what is the best state to live in for autism help?
Wow. South Carolina. Well, you know, I think it depends because we talked about the regional centers in California. I've never lived in California, but from everything I hear, it has a lot going for it in terms of the services that are governmentally provided. You know, if what you're looking for is a really good private school, you know, there's the New England Center for Children in Massachusetts or the Alpine Learning Center in New Jersey or the Bay School in California. If what you're looking for is a really good public school system, well, you know, it varies tremendously from state to state and from district to district. I've never lived in Missouri either, but I'm told that Columbia, Missouri has a fabulous public school system for autism. And if what you're looking for is insurance coverage or Medicaid coverage, you know, I think we have a good bill now in South Carolina, but you got to have the right type of job. You can't work for BMW, for instance, who is one of our big employers, but they're self-insured, so Ryan's Law doesn't cover them. In South Carolina, we also passed a Medicaid waiver that's specific to autism. That was part of the Ryan's Law legislative effort as well. And so now Medicaid will provide $50,000 a year of ABA up through age 11. But there's a waiting list to get on. You know, right now we've only got 370 kids being served on that Medicaid waiver. And we've got another several hundred on a waiting list. So it really depends on what specific benefit you're looking for and what your child needs.
And we do have to be careful, too, because of what's going on with the economy. I don't know how the other states are faring, but we're having real issues here in California. I mean, we didn't have a budget for the longest time because nobody could agree. And I actually got an email from my son's case manager saying that services were going to stop after a certain amount of time. And some of the regional centers and some of the school districts had actually borrowed money to cover, and they were just going from week to week. And now we've had, you know, the budget's been signed, but, you know, I don't know where they're getting the money, printing it in the back somewhere. But it's pretty scary. So you have to really be careful if you're thinking about moving places because you hear things are better. Really take a look because, well, I know the economy's going down the tubes in a lot of places, but it's affecting services everywhere. I mean, the state of California actually had a freeze on pay, and so everybody who worked for the state actually had to go back to, I think they were only getting minimum wage for 3 months, and so now that the budget's been signed, it's back to what they were earning before, but that's pretty scary.
Wow, that is really drastic. But yes, I mean we've seen it in Medicaid programs and other government services that you think are so incredibly safe, but in these economic times, they're not. And yes, I would be real careful before I move to greener grass as well, especially if you have a job with insurance where you are. That counts for a lot.
Right. Here's a question from Heidi in Silver Spring. What PDD NOS services are covered by Blue Cross Blue Shield for my 11-year-old son?
Blue Cross Blue Shield varies from policy to policy. And so if your insurance contract was issued in the state of Maryland, then Maryland is not a mandate state yet, as I just mentioned. So I don't know without looking. I have to look at your particular policy because that is Blue Cross Blue Shield doesn't really tell me anything. It depends on the particular contract that your employer negotiated with Blue Cross Blue Shield. Without a mandate in place, it's likely that the policy only covers speech therapy and occupational therapy and physical therapy. That would be my guess, but you really you have to look at the terms of your particular policy. And if you haven't ever seen it, you get it from your employer. You call the HR department and ask for a copy of the policy or the summary, depending on how much detail you need, and they're happy to provide it. Sometimes I think people are scared to call their employer because they don't want to raise any red flags that they need more insurance benefits. Let me tell you, those people in HR are accustomed to getting requests for the insurance policy all the time. It doesn't faze them in the least for you to ask for a copy of your policy.
Okay. Now, I've got a few more questions, but if there are listeners out there who are holding back and not asking any, go ahead and ask them, because we have, I think, somewhere between 15 and 20 minutes. None of my clocks here say the exact time. My computer says it's 7:40, so I guess we've got 20 more minutes. Here's a question from Donna H. in Woodbury, Minnesota. What type of help can we get to have our son, who has autism, who will be 19 in November, still included on our health insurance policy? He has not left our house except for doctor's appointments in 2 years and finds it impossible to even go anywhere socially. Any information on this will be of great help, especially since 18 years of age is usually the cutoff date to be covered. Thank you.
Wow. Well, my heart goes out to you, and I'm really sorry to hear how dire your situation is. Typically, most insurance policies have provisions that permit children with disabilities to stay on the policy longer. And you need to talk to your employer again, your HR department, if that's who your insurance is through, to find out about those provisions. Just explain that you have a child with a disability and find out what the provisions are for extending that coverage. At least through 25, I believe, and I think, I guess it varies from policy to policy, but I think you can keep him on a bit longer.
Okay. Here's another one from Heidi Wright in Kingsport. Are there any websites with legislation for children diagnosed with developmental delay, or do your bills for autism address developmental delay?
No, they don't. Excuse me, I'm chewing my Cheez-Its for dinner. The bill that I wrote in South Carolina and the bills that I'm familiar with in the other states do not specifically address developmental delay. Most of the current bills are either applicable to just the three autism spectrum disorders, that being autistic disorder, Asperger's, and PDD-NOS, or the five pervasive developmental disorders, the three I just named, plus Rett's, plus childhood disintegrative disorder. Now, there are developmental delays or disorders or disabilities beyond those that are classified in the DSM-IV as pervasive developmental disorder. And I'm not familiar with how insurance companies treat those typically. I believe that there are some states that have statutes that reference developmental delay generally, but I'm not from one of those states, and I don't know those particular laws.
Okay.
I would be curious, though, what kind of service is being denied if you're having problems with your insurance, because typically the reason that our kids are being denied treatment is because either they're seeking some treatment with which the insurance company is not familiar, like ABA or RDI or HBOT or a DAN protocol, something like that. And so it's the type of treatment itself that raises the red flag for the insurance company and that causes them to issue a denial. Or It's just that our kids have that 299.0 autism diagnosis in their medical files, and so they get the denial on that basis. If your child doesn't have an autism diagnosis and just has general developmental delay, then you wouldn't have the diagnostic code red flag that would trigger the denial. And so I wonder, is there something about the particular kind of treatment that you're seeking coverage for that's causing it? I don't know any more details of your situation, but I'm not aware of any reason why a child with developmental delay generally wouldn't be able to get speech therapy or OT or PT as long as that's provided in the policy, which it typically is to some extent.
Okay, I've got an interesting question here that has to do with developmental delay and insurance from Karen in Anchorage, Alaska. And of course, now I just touched something on my computer and it disappeared on me. Just a second, I'm finding it again. Here it is. I'm trying to get my son, who has high-functioning autism, in a social skills group with a psychologist. This is from Karen in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm trying to get my son, who has high-functioning autism, in a social skills group with a psychologist, and my insurance says it doesn't cover anything due to a developmental delay. Is there anything I can do? How can an insurance company not cover something that's due to a developmental delay?
Yeah, I think that's just a bogus excuse, like we were talking about earlier. If there's coverage for psychology visits, then it really doesn't matter the reason that your child is seeing the psychologist. I think this is just one that needs to be appealed, and you just got to stand firm. I mean, I've not read your specific policy. I don't know if there's some kind of specific exclusion, but, if the doctor is recommending a treatment, and if you don't have a doctor recommendation, get one. I mean, usually if you go in and tell a doctor, my child needs this social group with a psychologist, usually you can get them to write it up and say, this child needs this. Send that to your insurance company and say it's doctor prescribed. And, you might have to go through several tiers of appeal. But you got to hold their feet to the fire.
All this talk about insurance forms and having the time to fight insurance issues has reminded me of a problem that I'm facing, and I'm just going to take the time to ask you since you're here. my son had to be seen for some specific type of therapy with a psychologist, and at the same time, my father was dying from cancer, so I had a lot of travel to do to go take care of my dad. So I never got around to filing the papers, and recently when I filed the claims with the insurance company, they said that there was a statute of limitations that I hadn't filed within a year of the time that therapy had taken place, because that's how behind I was in my paperwork because of my dad, helping my dad out.
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions? Because the psychologist actually said to me, either tell them the truth and see if they'll, work with you on that, because, you were overwhelmed with your dad's stuff. Or go back and ask the psychologist to just give you other, because you're not lying about having spent the money, but put a different date on the forms. Do you have any comments to say?
Oh, this is you asking the question about your own situation.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't catch that at the very beginning. Well, I've faced that same issue myself where because life can be so overwhelming, I did not get claims filed within the year. And I went with the former approach, and that was just appealed to the insurance company and just said, look, I know you have the right to deny this because it wasn't paid within 1 year, but I am asking you, due to these exceptional circumstances about which I wrote a long letter, to consider paying the claim anyway. And they ultimately never paid the claim in full, but they did pay some of it, and so they didn't they did not reject it out of hand just based on the late filing.
Okay.
even though it's sometimes hard to envision, there are actually human beings who are on the other end of those phones at the insurance industry. And if you can get to the right ones and just kind of tell the story, and again, I think the advice that you and I were both doling out, Chantal, about not being angry with them from the outset and just asking
right.
for help, I think that works here too.
Yeah, and I ask that question not just for myself, but I know that everybody in the autism community is overwhelmed, and the paperwork is the stuff that you always save for last, because there's just, you know, you're handling crises all the time. And so it's so hard because, you know, sometimes you realize, oh, my gosh, how long has this been sitting here, or it's been under a pile of something else. And it's so nice to know. See, my idea was to do exactly what you just said, but because this psychologist had suggested also just writing different dates, I thought, oh, maybe that's an easy way out. But I don't feel comfortable with doing, it's, you know, basically lying.
Well, it's not you lying, it's the psychologist lying.
I hate to ask somebody to lie for me because I wouldn't lie for anybody.
Well, the thing is, we shouldn't have to. We shouldn't even have to consider that, because it is a fact of life that everything is overwhelming, including the paperwork, or maybe especially the paperwork, and it actually does take more than a year sometimes to get around to finding the paperwork in that stack of papers and having the time and the energy to get things filed. And it really is unfortunate that's being held against us. I understand the reason for the rule, but, you know, for every rule there are exceptions, and I think it's perfectly legitimate to ask them to work around.
Okay, I'm going to do that, and I'll report back to you, Lori.
Please do. I'd love to hear. And I'm sorry about your father's cancer.
Yeah, well, you know, I was lucky to have him this long. Everything, you know, as I'm getting older and my son's 19, I think, you know, you always hear about the sandwich generation when you have older parents
yeah.
and you have kids that are teenagers. But, gosh, when you have a special needs kid and you have parents that are needing attention, my mother's in the hospital right now. That's why I'm thinking about it. She went into emergency care on Friday. You know, you just, you know, you always think you can never handle more. But, boy, oh, boy, when your kids get older and your parents are getting older, if you're lucky to have them this long, you're going to find yourself in that little crunch space. So here, I've got another question from, let's see, this is Kelly in Indianapolis. How do I get Medicaid to cover my son's occupational, developmental, and speech therapies? I've gone through his PCP and gotten denied, then had a referral to a neurologist, which the speech therapy was approved, but not the occupational.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics. I don't know the reason for the denial, but, you know, if it's general Medicaid, then they should be covering. I wish everybody could speak up and tell me if that's your experience elsewhere. In my state, Medicaid does pay for occupational therapy as well, so I'd have to know the reason why they've denied the claim. Or refuse to cover. I mean, Medicaid is entitled to apply their own criteria in terms of what they think your child needs. So if that's the basis, then that could be a problem, because they are entitled to do that, to do separate testing and everything. But beyond that, it should be covered.
Okay, a couple of comments here as well as questions. And from Champagne, she says, my experience over many years as a speech and language pathologist is that many insurance companies don't pay for developmental delays. They only cover for treatments like therapy, but that is expected to have significant recovery in a relatively short period of time. So I'm not surprised that people are talking about denials for any of the developmental delay codes. She also says that it could be considered fraud if the provider puts a different date on the paperwork. Be careful. So I'm going to say right now, I'm recommending putting different dates on.
Yeah, really, we need to be very careful about that. Yeah, you're absolutely right that I think not only could be, it probably would be considered fraud on that date thing. So, yeah, let's go with the honest approach on that one. But back on the developmental delay thing, yeah, okay, I see a little bit more what the questions have been focused on now, and that's the whole distinction. I think this is what they're getting at, the distinction between habilitative and rehabilitative care. And really, insurers do this to some extent. Medicaid has been classic for doing this, saying that we're not going to pay for your child's speech therapy because your child never had speech to begin with. So we're not rehabilitating your child's speech or restoring it to where it was before an accident or an injury or something of that sort. I am told by high authority at the Federal Medicaid Center, CMS, that there is such a distinction in the law. I fail to see it in the Medicaid law myself, and that's another one of those battles that's on my long-term to-do list, is to try to fight that with Medicaid, because I don't think that's a legitimate distinction for our kids. I guess some of the insurers are trying to glom onto that distinction as well. But, I think it's a bogus distinction, because you can't hold yourself out as covering an illness such as developmental delay, but then say, oh, but we can't provide speech therapy because it's habilitative. That's the problem with a lot of our kids, is they never developed the speech or whatever the other skill is. So by denying habilitative, they're not providing meaningful coverage for our kids.
Okay, we only have 4 minutes, and we have a couple of questions, so we'll try and keep this short. But the first one is, how do I appeal insurance denial? Is there a website I can go to? This is from Heidi Wright in Tennessee.
Your insurance policy should tell you in the fine print at the back, or maybe the fine print at the front, exactly how to appeal. Typically, there's an internal appeal process, and that may be followed by an external appeal process. So first, you have to appeal it within the company. Somebody within, a higher up, a supervisor will review, and a lot of times you'll get relief right there. And then if that doesn't work, there's a second layer of appeal that's to an external body who will look at the denial. But all of the information about how to do it should be written in the policy.
I guess maybe this person was also asking if there's a place to go to that gives you advice on how to write those kind of letters.
I'd really have to do a Google search myself. I've done Google searches along those lines before and come up with some letters. And, there's one of the autism books out there. Is it your book, Chantal? There's one book that gives some sample letters and talks about how to appeal.
I don't know.
Okay. I can't think which book it is right off the top of my head right now, but I know there are some out there.
But the Google search sounds really good.
I guess this is one thing that you learn in law school, so maybe I should pass this along as well. There's no magic formula to doing any of this. You don't have to use any special paper with lines and numbers on it. There are no special terms you have to say. You just write them a letter and say, I want to appeal. Here's what happened. Here's what you said. Here's why you're wrong. It really has there's no format or formula that you must follow.
Okay. I'm going to ask one more question and then two comments from listeners. This is from Linda in Mount Laurel. Do you know if any insurance will cover Dan doctor visits or any biomedical treatments? We have been paying cash for all of those, but wondering if we submit it out of network, if anything would get paid. Thanks.
When my child was seeing a Dan doctor, we paid everything out of pocket first, but then we did get reimbursed by our insurance company for some of it. So yes, there are some insurers covering it. I'd have to see your particular policy to know if yours will. Just try it. File the claim.
Right. Okay, another person asks, Lori, could you please give us your email address again? Thank you.
LORRI.UNU AutismMB at AutismSpeaks.org.
Want to repeat that one more time?
Sure. It's LORRI.UN, that's N as in Nancy, and then UM as in Mary, B as in boy, Lori.Unum at AutismSpeaks.org. I picked up that lovely Unum name from my Boston husband.
I'm going to end with a comment here from a listener, from Mary Chouinard in South Paris, Maine. This isn't a question but a comment on how much these web conferences have meant to me and I'm sure many others, especially those in rural states such as ours. It is very hard to find the services that our developmental pediatrician wants for our 12-year-old son who has autism. We found a speech writing therapist, and then our insurance company caused so many problems that the therapist dropped us until we got a new speech eval, which we did, and then they refused to pay for the eval that they had requested. I'm so disgusted with insurance companies. Again, thanks for giving the seminar. Please keep them coming. Well, it's good these seminars are helping people out there, even though, unfortunately, we can't, we don't have the answers to all the questions. And Lori has so much information, but it's still hard to specifically answer a lot of the questions out there because every state is different. But did you have anything more you wanted to share, Lori, before we sign off?
Well, no, I just want to thank you for doing a great job with this interview, and thanks, Ernest, for putting it together, and to all of the listeners. You know, I wish you lots of luck out there. I wish you luck in your own battles with your insurance company, and please don't accept their denials. And go out there and try to change the law. You know, in a lot of cases, the law is just stacked against us right now. But laws are meant to be changed, and average people can do it. So I encourage you to be the one who takes up the cause in your state, and I'd be so happy to help you if you would do it.
Thank you, Lori. I want to thank you so much for everyone, from everyone, for what you've done with Ryan's Law to help start this initiative, which is now reaching out everywhere to all 50 states. And thank you for taking the time to be on this seminar. As you can see, people have really, really enjoyed it and profited from your experience.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.
Good night.